Good gracious Jesus, you sure are being salty today with this guy just trying to bury a deceased family member, I said to myself on multiple occasions this week while working through the second part of Dr. King's speech and this passage from Matthew's gospel that you heard read today. Feels kind of stone cold of Jesus, you know what I mean? Like this nice guy just taps him on the shoulder and says, I'm totally up for following you to the next town, maybe even the end of the world. But my dad just died, and I really need to take care of a few things. Considering how deeply spiritual, not to mention cultural expectations that existed, considering how deep burial rites would have been for an ancient Near Eastern person, including Jesus, it makes Jesus look like even meaner and kind of apathetic and kind of sarcastic and kind of angry. What's the deal here? Why the rush? Jesus doesn't seem to be in a rush all the time, for what it's worth. He often goes up to a mountain or a solitary place to pray. He seems to hang out there a while. He rejects the urgency that people project onto him when things happen, like Lazarus dying. He didn't get there in time. Or somebody wanting an answer to their most pressing questions. Or hordes of crowds demanding that he do this, that, or the other. Jesus isn't really ever in a rush. So what's his deal here? Did he not like this disciple? Like, was he kind of hoping he'd just stay behind and not follow him? Well, I think this story is meant to press us, surprise, surprise, but maybe not in the ways we'd expect at face value. I think it's almost too obvious of a read to think this story is simply telling us to cut ties with anything and everything that keeps us from true discipleship. We still got chores to do. But I do think this moment invites us to reorder and reimagine our interpretation of time and what we do with it. Because ironically enough, what sounds like a rush here might be better described as a whole new pace. What seems like myopic or one-track action might actually be much more centered, wise, and profoundly intentional approach to life. It might be what Dr. King describes as the fierce urgency of now, la urgencia impetuosa de ahora. It might be the power and dynamism of deep, contemplative, active awareness about what is most needed at any given moment, about how to respond fully and forthrightly, even as the world calls back to us, crawling with its own priorities, and proclaims to us, no, this is what matters most. Jesus is constantly helping us sift through our ethics and our action and inviting us to listen attentively for what is fiercely calling us now. So in this case, what sounds like hurried, rash dismissal is really centered, mindful action. Perhaps a modern-day overlay would help us all flesh this out a bit. Another school shooting, this time in Parkland, Florida, For all intents and purposes, it's safe to say we probably all assumed that this story would be like the others. That's the script we'd been following for 15 years now. And we assumed that it would be the one that this community would read from again. But this time something a little different happens. The actual high schoolers, who are fed up with what they are seeing around them, turn their trauma into action. They know the script all too well, and this time they refuse to play along. They refuse the rituals of violence that were handed to them. And then folks start pulling on their shirt sleeves. Whoa, 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 whoa. Now's not the time for this. Now's not the time for coarse, forceful language or protests or town halls. We need to bury the dead first. We need to offer our thoughts and prayers. You see, dear high schoolers at Parkland, there's a cultural and collective set of rituals about how we respond to these slaughterings in America. There's a certain way we go about this so that we don't ask too many questions or demand too many answers about what happened and what to do about it. It's best you step in line. Follow the rules. And these high school students, with the very force and fierce urgency of Jesus in Matthew 8, say, "Let the dead bury the dead." Thoughts and prayers have become a ritual soaked in blood. We see past this sham. We don't want this script. These rituals are too violent for us. Unless we only applaud these Parkland high schoolers, let's be clear. They're sure not the first cohort of 18-year-olds to refuse violent rituals and demand truth-telling from the highest offices in the land. We've just found creative ways to disparage other movements. To everything from Dreamers demanding a clean immigration bill, to Black Lives Matter leaders calling for a clear set of policies that invite us to reckon with the grotesque inequality that first established the land of the enslaved and the home of the colonized. Let the dead bury the dead is not disregard for the dead. It is disdain for the rituals that do nothing to end systems that left them dead in the first place. To be clear, I'm not saying that Jesus expects us all to run like the wind from one fire to another, screeching out to the universe, "All of these things are fiercely claiming their urgency in the world. I must respond to all of them now." I'm also not saying, on the other hand, that intentional work or slow work is somehow bad or wrong on its own. Of course not. No, Jesus is demanding that we live into a different kind of imagination, one that is centered, aware, clear-headed, one that sees the world for what it is and also refuses to leave it there. One that refuses rituals soaked in blood. This is the irony of this urgency that Dr. King calls forth as we examine the second portion of his speech today. Because he just spent a whole first page on the past. Pastor Elijah unpacked it for us last week on history. On the close and intentional examination of what was and how it got us here. That can't be done quickly. That takes lots of time for us to understand and absorb and reckon with the past. But there does come a time when we must say to those pulling on our shirt sleeves, demanding us to play along and perform the rituals of death, no, let the dead bury the dead. Enough history, enough examination, enough exploration about how we got here, enough measured responses and gradual approaches, enough waiting, no more scripts. It's time to let the dead bury the dead. You know full well that Dr. King spent his life dealing with white folks who kept telling him to take it easy, to just slow his roll a little bit, to work with them on a long-term sustainable plan for this complex experiment called integration. You know full well that Dr. King spent his time dealing with white pastors like the one who left this earthly life just this week, pastors who maybe even while conceding the importance of social action as it related to the gospel really just didn't know what to do with the race thing, and certainly didn't know how to call their churches to leave their violent rituals behind and follow Jesus. See, calls for gradualism can sound so important, so valiant, so noble. How could we dare challenge a reverent call for thoughts and prayers? How could we dare challenge a white person's plea for law and order amidst these demands to integrate America? How could we dare challenge calls for patience and like-mindedness, even if institutions can't quite get all the violence and dehumanizing rhetoric out of their documents and practices? Gradualism sounds so noble, so good, so responsible, ethical, thoughtful, measured, appropriate, fitting, mindful of the potential harm that too much disruption might cause. But see, what gradualism usually and insidiously keeps denying is the layers, the stories of pain that reside under the surface of urgency. Gradualism keeps missing the imagination, the potential, the freedom that lies under the surface of urgency. Gradualism keeps getting us nowhere because it refuses to see how urgency is not irrationality or rashness. But urgency is powerful, dynamic, grounded, not rooted in mythology, but reality. Gradualism has all but strangled the life of the Church of the Living God. Gradualism has left more bodies on the ground than we can begin to count. Gradualism, though seemingly noble, carries with it the danger of being violent and unimaginative and blasphemous. Ironically enough, letting the dead bury the dead, refusing to be weighed down by the rituals and scripts of those in denial, living into the fierce urgency of now can be both liberating and clarifying. Of course it's exhausting. Of course it dismantles and reprioritizes the living of our days. Of course it feels unsettling. But it also answers the soul's deepest questions. Why am I here? Why am I here right now for this time? Dr. King demanded urgency not to wear out his dear friends or put them in harm's way. Dr. King demanded urgency not because he enjoyed chaos for its own sake. Dr. King demanded urgency because he was living in the realm of cosmic time. Not the ticking clock of rituality, but the Kairos clock of the kingdom. A clock whose rhythm could only be heard by the deep, wide, slow listening of one's own heart. Dr. King's letter from a Birmingham jail was later rewritten into one of his most famous books. In it, King offers a little context to the behind-the-scenes business that began the bus boycott in Birmingham. There had already been successful actions in several southern cities, but in Birmingham, there was a different kind of struggle. Listen in with me for a moment. He says, in Montgomery, during the bus boycott, and in the Albany, Georgia campaign, we'd had the advantage of a sympathetic and understanding national press from the outset. In Birmingham, we did not. It is terribly difficult to wage such a battle without the moral support of the national press to counteract the hostility of local editors. And here's where I want you to really pay attention. The words bad timing came to be ghosts haunting our every move in Birmingham. Yet people who use this argument were ignorant of the background of our planning. They did not know that we had postponed our campaign twice. They did not know our reason for attacking in time to affect Easter shopping. And here's the line I want you to absorb this morning. Above all, they did not realize that it was ridiculous to speak of timing when the clock of history showed that the Negro had already suffered 100 years of delay. It was ridiculous to speak of timing when the clock of history. See, what can feel like rushing to those of us who want to keep looking back so we can bury the dead is nothing but denial and disregard for those of us who already buried the dead 100 years ago, who carry the names of the dead in their bones and blood, who hear the stories of the dead ringing in their ears. They have long buried the dead. They are asking us, what will you do for the living? Amen.